To order. Welcome, everyone. We will now open a public hearing on three bills, Senate Bill 141, 142, and 143. And we have the same two witnesses signed up for both bills, so we will allow them to testify when the time comes. But first of all, we will hear from counsel on what these bills do.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. All three bills come from the Oregon Youth Authority. Senate Bill 141 enables that all offenders in the custody of the Oregon Youth Authority are treated the same under Oregon's wage and hour, health and safety, worker compensation laws, regardless of whether or they're there through the juvenile department or there through the adult court. What happens with youth offenders, Madam Chair, members of the committee, if they're adjudicated delinquent through the juvenile court, and they are, if the judge so determines that they need to spend time in the youth authority institution, they are sent directly to the youth authority. The youth authority has both legal and physical custody. If they are sent to adult court for trial, or if they are charged with a Measure 11 offense and are tried and convicted in adult court, what happens is they go, I believe, originally to the Department of Corrections. They keep legal custody and then physical custody. They are sent to the Oregon Youth Authority where they can remain up, I believe, to age 25. And they have physical custody, but the Oregon Department of Corrections has legal custody. And what you will see through all of these bills is an attempt to have consistency in policy as it relates to the individuals that are in there, regardless of how they got there. 142 vests legal and custody of a youth offender on parole from the Oregon Youth Authority with OIA rather than the youth's parent or other person to whom the offender is returned, clarifies that OIA has the same statutory authority over youth offenders under its custody regardless of whether the offender was sent to OIA by the juvenile court or was tried and convicted as an adult. Senate Bill 143 repeals ORS 42500. And that's an issue that relates to how a youth can be sent to a mental hospital, state mental hospital or a psychiatric facility. And there was a bill last session that dealt with the same issue that amends, I believe, ORS 179. And I understand that's a cleanup from that bill. I believe it was Senate Bill 2141?
House Bill.
From House Bill, excuse me, Madam Chairman of the Committee. That's summary of the bills.
Okay, well, we have Phil Lemon and Phil Cox, the two Phils, signed up here. And so I will leave it to you to decide whether you want to go through them one by one or have one person take all three. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Phil Lemon. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Youth Authority. With me here today is Phil Cox, who's our Treatment Services Manager. We wanted to bring people with the same first name just to, again, make the process more easy for you as you go through.
We need all the help we can get, Mr. Lemon. Thank you.
Well, a few years ago, it was all Karens at the OIA, but we're adjusting. We had brought before you what we thought were three pretty straightforward cleanup bills. Since we introduced them, we've gone back and talked more with Department of Corrections, and because we are dealing with, as counsel mentioned, the interaction of our authority with theirs over juvenile law offenders and adult law offenders, it's gotten a little more complicated. So what I'd like to do today is kind of walk you through what the issues are, how we structured these things, but we will need to get some amendments and come back and ask you to work on those a little later. So if that's satisfactory, I'll go ahead.
Very agreeable. Thank you.
Senate Bill 141, again, as counsel described, we have two types of offenders in our population. One is the juvenile offender who has committed an offense prior to age 18, who has gone to juvenile court and has been committed to our custody, either on probation, so they're in community but supervised by us, or into our closed custody facilities, and we have 10 of those throughout the state, and then we work with the local juvenile department service providers and the courts, and once they're through in our closed custody, then we parole them out, and they can be either in directly back to their parents, to a foster care setting, to a residential placement, or to independent living. And so as counsel described, Senate Bill 141, what we were trying to do is make sure that we have the same opportunities and same authority over both types of populations while they're in our closed custody system. But because they are in the legal custody of the Department of Corrections, we found that there are some glitches that we need to address in how our authority interacts with their specific statutory provisions. So, again, we'll be working with them and bringing some amendments back to you to make sure we've got all that taken care of appropriately. So that's Senate Bill 141. Senate Bill 142 has two different issues. The first, again, is a broader range of our statutory authority over both our juvenile law offenders and our adult law offenders. That includes the mental health transfers that counsel referred to. And again, because it interacts with DOC's authority, we should have done a little better job in working with them to identify how those things interact, and they do have some questions that we need to work through before they're ready to come. The other I would point out is in Section 1 of the bill. Right now the statute says that when a juvenile law offender has been committed to our closed custody facility and is paroled out, then the parent has legal custody of that youth. What legal custody means for these purposes is that they have physical control over the youth and they have the responsibility to provide for food, shelter, clothing, education, etc. That provision, though, is in conflict with other of our statutes that gives us the OIA legal custody, so we have the legal authority to direct their movements, and if we need to revoke their custody back into our system, we can do that. So what we need to do in that particular provision is just making sure we're matching up what kind of authority we need or want to have over paroled youth and what kinds of authority and responsibility the parents of that youth should have. So those are some cleanups that we'll need to do in that bill. Then finally, Senate Bill 143, as counsel mentioned, what happened last biennium is when we have a youth in our system who is in a mental health crisis situation, that they would be, if they need to be transferred to a mental health institution, we would transfer them to the adolescent unit of the Oregon State Hospital. That unit was closed last session, and so we had to come back to the legislature and make sure that we had the statutory authority to place youth who are in mental health crisis in a facility other than the Oregon State Hospital. So right now we use the Farm Home in Corvallis as our mental health crisis institution. And so House Bill 2141 did two things. It gave us the same statutory authority we had to have both juvenile law offenders and adult law offenders transfer back and forth between those two facilities as their needs arose. And we also implemented some new due process requirements that came out of a U.S. Supreme Court decision. And so we work with Juvenile Rights Project and the Oregon Advocacy Center to make sure that we had those statutory provisions in line. So again, in this case, we didn't get all the statutes cleaned up properly. We need to take another look at that, and so that's what Senate Bill 143 is intended to do. So I'm sorry we don't have these ready for you to act on today, and I'd be glad to take any questions you may have on those issues.
Thank you. Are there questions, Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess boil it down for me on the first two bills, 141 and 142, what's the problem you're trying to fix? What brought this issue forward? I mean,
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, what brought it forward is as we looked at our operations and started looking at what we have legal authority for juvenile law offenders and adult law offenders, we found that there's a discrepancy. Most of our laws were created in 1995 when the Oregon Youth Authority was broken out of Department of Human Services. And so there was basically just kind of a cut and paste of authority from DHS to this newly independent agency, OIA. It was not at that time fully drawn out that we would have both juvenile law offenders and adult law offenders in our populations. And so this is just, a long overdue cleanup just to make sure that we have all the dots lining up where we need to have them.
Madam Chair, may I clarify, is there a court case? Did somebody sue you? Was there somebody you had to release? Why now?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, no, there was no precipitating incident of any kind. It's just in our normal course of reviewing our work and our authority, we came across these anomalies.
Okay, one more.
Please.
And I know you spoke to the issue of the parent control or parent guardianship, but it seems like this bill, 142 I'm speaking of now, and I haven't looked at the other statutes you referenced that said that they treat you one way versus another, but it sure seems like you are trying to make it very clear that you are in custody, and this is not just a cleanup. If you take this bill by itself, this is a huge policy shift.
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, I would say that this is a case where the historical practice of the agency and the statute do not line up. it's not that we, and it's other statutes. I understand what you're getting.
Hey, let me clarify. Is that a long way of saying you haven't been following the law?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, no. We have other statutes that do grant us legal custody that, in a broad sense, but this would, I mean, you have to read them together, and that's where you see the conflict. And, Phil, if you can help me with some of the direct cites. Let me have Phil go into that, if I may, Madam Chair.
You have to, Madam Chair.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Good afternoon. My name is Phil Cox. I'm the Treatment Services Manager for the Youth Authority. With respect to the conflicting statutes, the specific statute referenced in Senate Bill 142 conflicts with, let me find it here, ORS 419-519.
That was 419-519?
419-519. That then became 419-550. 419C, excuse me, 550.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, maybe I can help on it. I assume you're not talking about the fact, Mr. Cox, in the committee, that you're talking about a legal conflict. You may be talking about a policy conflict. Otherwise, there would be, I assume, an amendment to that particular section. And maybe if I could back up with Mr. Lemon. When we talk about retaining legal custody, I heard you said that when the parent has it, they are responsible when the kid's on parole for food, you know, and shelter and care. My assumption is that you're not, if they're on parole and they're living at home, you're not looking to pick up those expenses. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, counsel, correct. The definition of and authority of the duties of legal custodian of a youth or youth offender is found in 419C550. And among those, the custodian has physical custody and control, supply the youth offender with food, clothing, shelter, and incidental necessaries, care, education, and discipline. They can authorize ordinary medical care. They make reports and supply information to the court, and they apply for Social Security benefits or public assistance. Now, if the youth is in closed custody or in a residential placement, for example, then we are charged with recovering from the parent the cost of that care. And so all of those apply because they are in our immediate custody and control. If the youth is paroled home, then the parent is the one who is providing the food and shelter, but we obviously need to have legal authority to exercise and control the conditions of parole. If they violate that, then we need to be able to revoke them. We, I think, you would want us to have the reporting requirements to the court, but it makes little sense for us to go and collect the money for the care from the parents, bring it into the agency, and then send it back out to the parents. So while other statutes give us that general authority, this parole to the parents statute is one that is in direct conflict with some of those concepts. So what we want to do is go through this statute and be very clear about when they are in an out-of-home placement, we have a broader range of authority and responsibility for these youth. If they are paroled home, then some of these things are more appropriately placed with the parent, but some would retain with OIA. So that's the cleanup nature of it.
I think what Senator Beyer was trying to get at is that that's what you've been doing now in practice. And you have authority in other parts of the statute to do that, but this part is in conflict. Is that paraphrase?
Well, without seeing the other statutes that say that, this, you know, if you read this bill and the changes proposed by Section 1 of this bill, it is a huge shift in policy. It's not a cleanup. So until I see it in context with other statutes that they are going by, I was wondering why they're asking for this huge shift in public policy.
Well, we are a policy committee, so
But normally there is a problem they're trying to fix, and they said there wasn't a problem they're trying to fix. It was a cleanup of statutes. And that's why
I wanted to find out where these conflicts were.
Madam Chair, let's take Senator Prezansky first.
Madam Chair, reading or hearing what what's been given to us, it seems to me that the conflict is that the Youth Authority wants to still be able to maintain the control that they have through another statute over the child if it's determined that the child is going to be paroled back to the custodial family unit setting, but that they still control basically that child, that if they feel that they need to do a revocation of that parole, that they can bring them back. And reading what's in the statute that's currently would be coming out, I can see where there appears to be that conflict, and this would make it clearer. The only thing I would ask that when you are meeting with the Department of Corrections and you're looking at the changes that's currently written on lines 10 and 11, it says subject to ORS 420.045 sub 2. My reading of that does not really seem to really address the issue, because that there under sub 2 it just says at such time as the Director of the Youth Authority finds that a final release is compatible in the safety of the community and the best interest of the youth offender, that the consent of the committing court, then he can basically issue a final order of discharging the youth. But I'm not sure if that really ties together the part of where I understood the issue is that, yes, we're paroling the child to the parents, but we still have exclusive control of bringing that child back in if they're not in compliance or we find it's in the best interest or for the child or whatever. So I don't know if the reference to that sub 2 is the correct reference.
Madam Chair, if I may, in response to Senator Byer's question, the other statute that gives us broader authority is 419C-481. And if I may just briefly, the juvenile court retains jurisdiction and the OIA retains legal custody of a youth offender committed to it, regardless of the physical placement of the youth offender by the youth authority. So that, again, plain English wording of that is, no matter if that youth is in closed custody, a residential program, or paroled to a parental home, OIA has legal custody, and that is in conflict with the statute that's printed in the bill, which says it goes to the parent. Does that address your question, sir?
Yes, that answered my question. As I said, I hadn't seen that. Yes. The conflict was...
And I apologize for not bringing it to you immediately.
Council, do you have a question?
Sure, Madam Chairman of the Committee. Mr. Lemon, I assume that you probably want to go back and refine the definition that we see there in lines 10 and 11, because my assumption is you're not looking for full legal custody in the circumstances. You do not want to be paying for board and room, et cetera. Exactly. And so you would probably want to come back with an amendment that would specify what your authority was in this regards. And I assume it would be something less than what we consider to be currently legal custody.
Or wouldn't it be kind of a dual legal custody in the sense that the parents have this obligation as to the financial burden in providing the place, but you still have the custody or the authority to actually bring the child back? And that's kind of what I'm getting at when you look at that subpart. It doesn't seem like it's going to make it any clearer as to who has what rights and obligations.
Madam Chair, basically, again, the list of the responsibilities of legal custodian goes the full range from can you direct that youth's movements, whether that's within the community, order them to go to treatment, revoke them if necessary to close custody, and who has the guardian responsibility for you're going to go to school, we're going to give you food, we're going to give you clothing. So that's kind of the dividing line. They're placed in the parental home because they will go, that's an appropriate placement for them, both for their reformation efforts and from a public safety standpoint. But the parents will be acting, again, as you would think of as parents. They will be providing for the necessities of that youth. We just need to maintain our ability to fulfill our ability to implement the court's order to protect public safety, to make sure they're complying with their reformation plans and keep them and get them out of the system if we can.
Well, I think it's important as you look at revisions on this to clarify what aspects of legal custody you're talking about, because it is a broader term.
And we appreciate the discussion.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. One was simply that, because not having seen all the statutes relative, I mean, if we're as long as we're not totally removing parents' legal custody and we're just having overarching legal custody, as long as that's clear, I think I'm fine with that. But my other question was, what issues does DOC have with these bills? Is it?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, I have not been involved in the direct discussions with DOC other than to know that they have their own very long list of statutes that gives them authority that may conflict in some of the things we're trying to do. Because what we did is, especially on the close custody side, is any of the youth who are in our system, regardless of their legal status, we want the ability to work with them on an equal basis. But one of these, for example, is a workers' comp bill. So both types of youth would be covered in the event of a work-related injury. DOC has their own set of statutes on inmate injuries and how those occur. So we just want to make sure that our authority does not overlap or conflict with their existing authority. To give, if you'd like another example, or does that?
Well, I guess, Madam Chair, it's just I mean, it makes sense to me that if they have them, that they live under their rules. Quite simply, I'm just wondering if it's more potential liability issues or because of cross-jurisdictional, and they just maybe DOC just wants to be clear that yeah, you can go ahead and do this, but they're yours, and just so the transitions. Clear and distinct, maybe, but.
Chair Burdick, Senator Cruz, if I may, subsection 4 of section 4 of Senate Bill 142, the Department of Corrections had a bit of angst about, because this particular section speaks to what happens when a youth offender or other person is at a hospital setting and their commitment to the youth authority expires. They turn 25. It is fairly silent in this section about what would happen if this is a Department of Corrections inmate. What the statute says is that there are 72 hours for that person to leave the hospital, but what it doesn't say is what happens to that person if it's a DOC inmate and that person isn't a youth offender who's being released from OA commitment. And so we want to be able to clarify this with the Department of Corrections folks.
So it's, Madam Chair, so it's transitional things, making sure that things don't fall through the cracks.
Okay, verdict, Senator Cruz, precisely.
Good question, Senator Cruz. Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Couldn't some of that be handled through memorandum of understanding between agencies, which happens all the time, that you guys simply say, if we've got your people, they are under our rules. If you don't like that, take them back.
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, I think that's one possibility. I don't know enough about whether there are actual conflicts or whether we're just trying to clarify. I think we have a little bit of both. And I think the example that Mr. Cox just raised about where we have, if it's a DOC youth in our facility, has a mental health crisis, we place them in the farm home, and then that youth reaches the maximum age of jurisdiction. We have no legal authority over them. They strictly are under DOC control, and that's not something we'd be able to resolve with a memorandum. I think that those are the kind of things that require
statutory
change.
But I was thinking more like the workers' comp and the wage hour laws and the other stuff that you had mentioned, or the staff, the measure summary mentions. And it seems like those issues could be clarified that way, that if we have them, they follow our rules. If you don't like it, take them back.
Council.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Beyer, I think with the rules that we're talking about are statutes, and we're talking, and regulation is really interpretation of statute, and if they don't have statutory authority, it may be a bit of a reach in regulation to go there. I'm not advising them, but I'm sure that they've run this by their attorneys in the Department of Justice, and that very well could be the problem. So.
Okay, well, are there other questions or comments from the committee council?
Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Lehman, on lines 15 and 16 and throughout the bill in 142, you use the term other person. Could you describe what you mean by that term?
Madam Chair, council, again, what we're trying to get at is a young person under the age of, who commits a crime under the age of 18, who ends up in the adult criminal justice system, who then either through waiver or Measure 11 charge is in the legal custody of the Department of Corrections, the physical custody of the Oregon Youth Authority. So the definition of youth offender in statute is, in shorthand, someone who's been through the juvenile court process. Other person, in shorthand, would be another person who is either through the Department of Corrections, the adult criminal justice process. We have a statute that allows tribes to develop intergovernmental agreements to pay for placements in our closed custody facilities. If for some reason we have a federal offender, which happens periodically, those would be the people who do not fit in the youth offender category who would be subject to this definition and action.
Well, maybe you could think about defining that at some point, because I had the same question. It seems quite broad, and if there's a finite universe that people are talking about, I think particularly in the case of the youth who are remanded into adult court, that, you know, to specify that that's who you're talking about.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
Me? Oh, just got a plan.
A plan?
A plan.
What's your plan, Senator Pruszynski?
The plan is bold.
Senator Cruz.
You got to watch out for those two.
Yeah, when his eyes light up like that, I get concerned.
We spend all day together every day. We're dangerous.
Are there other questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much. And I think you have a bit of work to do on these, and we'll look forward to seeing them back. The sooner the better.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anybody else who wants to testify on these bills? Okay, I will close the public hearing on these bills, 141, 142, and 143. And committee, we have a short day today because we made the decision to remand restitution day from instead of rolling over today, we are taking it up tomorrow. So enjoy the free time. It won't happen very often. And with that, we are adjourned.